Introduction. I embarked on a literary career in the early 1980s by writing freelance magazine articles for Outside, Rolling Stone, Smithsonian, and a motley of lesser-known publications. To make rent, I had to hustle 30 or 40 assignments per year, and most of what I wrote was garbage. But I managed to scrape together a meager living and learned my craft in the bargain. In 1990, a small independent publisher collected a dozen short pieces I'd written about climbing and published them as a book called Eiger Dreams, Ventures Among Men and Mountains, for which they paid me an advance of $2,000. I was ecstatic. This princely sum wasn't enough to keep the creditors at bay, however, so I continued to crank out magazine pieces at a frenetic pace, one of which I expanded into a second book, Into the Wild, published in January 1996. After my third book, Into Thin Air, was released 15 months later, I had the financial means to cut back drastically on magazine work and pursue book-length projects instead. It was liberating to be able to focus on a single undertaking for 5 or 6 years, instead of juggling multiple assignments that had to be completed in a matter of months, if not weeks, to ward off financial disaster. Most of the short pieces I wrote during the years between Eiger Dreams and Into Thin Air vanished into the crevices of time and have been forgotten. But Anchor Books has retrieved 7 articles from this period, plus 2 more recent essays, and rescued them from oblivion with this new collection: Classic Crack Hour, Mark Fu's Last Ride, After the Fall, and other essays from the vault. Thanks for giving it a listen. Mark Fu's Last Ride. 22 miles down Highway 1 from San Francisco, a craggy fist of land called Pillar Point thrusts emphatically into the cold Pacific. Friday, December 23, 1994, dawned fair over this stretch of coast. Mountainous waves crashed against the headlands, spraying up billows of mist that unfurled languidly across the beaches. Beyond the end of the point, some 15 surfers bobbed in the muted winter sunlight, scanning the horizon for approaching swells. It was not uncommon to see surfers off the point, a spot they called Mavericks, dressed in heavy hooded wetsuits and sitting astride oversized boards. But the hovering helicopter, the 3 boats of photographers just outside the surfline, and the throng of spectators lining the cliffs suggested this was no ordinary surf session. For more than a week, the largest, most perfectly shaped waves in a decade had been thundering over the reef at the end of Pillar Point. Word traveled quickly over the international surfers' grapevine. Mavericks, which had recently emerged as one of the world's heaviest waves, was going off. Upon hearing the news, a trio of renowned big wave surfers from the Hawaiian Islands, Brock Little, Ken Bradshaw, and Mark Fu, hurried to California to join the local crew in the surf. The names and faces of the 3 Hawaiians were familiar to most of the 5 million surfers on the planet. Who among them was top dog in the surf was a matter of lively debate, but there was no disagreement over who cut the highest profile out of the water. Mark Sheldon Fu was not afflicted with an excess of modesty or self-doubt. In his resume, he unabashedly described himself as surfing's consummate living legend. Detractors called him grandiose, and worse, but it didn't crimp Fu's style. In his Filofax were the phone numbers of surfing's premier photographers, whom he cultivated and kept in close contact with. His picture appeared in print with uncanny frequency, and he hosted a surfing show on cable television. Fu made no bones about his thirst for fame or his strategy for achieving it. Ride the world's biggest waves with singular audacity, and do it when the cameras were rolling. That Friday morning, cameras were present in abundance to document the historic convergence of Fu and his celebrated colleagues on Mavericks. It promised to be a momentous coming out for an underappreciated California wave. Despite its proximity to San Francisco and Santa Cruz, as recently as 1990, only a handful of locals had ever heard of Mavericks, and only one brave soul, a townie named Jeff Clark, had actually surfed it. By and by, rumors started to drift up the coast about a misto surf break near Half Moon Bay that generated thick, grinding barrels tall enough to